Good Take episode. I am Zevin Schuster alongside my friend, my lifelong sports accomplice, Alexander Hutton. How are you doing today, Alexander? How's quarantine? How's shelter in place? How is it all treating you?
Quarantine, shelter in place is okay. It's not the greatest thing in the world, but kind of coming up with fun stuff to pass the time. My brother, who's going to come on in a little bit, he can tell you all about it. We've been coming up with all sorts of ways to keep ourselves entertained. And with that in mind, it's not going too bad. What about you? How are you doing?
It's pretty good. I wish I had a sibling to like play sports against, like hockey, yeah. Wrestling. So I pretty much, my dad and I, we play like pigeon, game pigeon, like on the against the game.
On the phone.
So that's pretty fun. But you know, it's definitely, you know, the cupboard is near empty. So speaking of empty cupboards, it's a good opening segue. The Warriors roster this year was kind of an empty cupboard. How can they restock their cupboard starting into the season?
I think the first step comes with the draft. I think there's, you know, they're hopefully going to get a lottery pick, a top three pick more specifically. I think there's a lot of good options there. There's a lot of, because this is such an open draft, there's a lot of things that they could do, a lot of different players they could take, and a lot of different options, whether it's trading down or trading the pick and trading out of the draft altogether, a lot of different things to look at. So
nice. There's obviously like several avenues they can go. Like they have the traded player, they have the mid-level exception, they have the draft pick, which they could trade back, trade forward. We both know like how just like uncertain this whole draft is, like not even just the players, but like when it's going to happen. So I think that, look, so before we get into like player X versus player Y, what balance should they strike between drafting for now or trading the pick for someone now versus trying to like, you know, stay competitive when Steph is out? I mean, I certainly have my opinions. I mean, for me, we know how much things sucked pre-2012.
Right.
I mean, we may never have a player as good as Steph Curry until our grandkids. I think it should be like 80-20, 90-10, like go now. But it has to be taken into consideration. You want your guy to be good 5 or 6 years. I mean, you certainly want them to be good. What do you think about sort of that balance? And then, yeah, if there's any players that you think can maybe check both boxes, and then we'll go into free agents and stuff too. But who wants the draft? And what's your thought on that whole like outlook too?
I do think that now is the big thing, because you know Steph only has a certain number of years left. Klay only has a certain number of years left. Draymond only has a certain number of years left. So I think it's important to focus on those guys and building around them and keeping that core intact and coming up with guys. And that, with that in mind, the best solution might be to trade the pick, trade out of the draft altogether, see if you can package something for some current NBA player who can help you win now, whether that's the traded player exception or something bigger than that. That would obviously involve, you know, trading players currently on the roster to make that happen. But I think that's something that you could see really working.
Okay. Who do you like, outside of like the obvious four? I mean, obviously Steph, Klay, Draymond, Wiggins. Who on the roster do you trust? Like my whole metric of, do I trust this person, you know, as like a foundational piece of the roster is like, could they play 15 minutes of like an intense road playoff game? So for example, Eric Paschal, I trust him.
Yeah.
He belongs in the court. I think there's no question. I believe you're higher on Jordan Poole than me. How many guys on the current roster, not considering like, you know, who we could acquire, do you like? I mean, it's not many. How many guys do you trust could be, you know, contributors? Because at this point, we need depth. You know.
Yeah. There's the main four that you mentioned. I also trust Paschal similarly. Damian Lee probably. Marquese Chris probably. I think Jordan Poole definitely not there yet. The role I see him kind of playing in the future, the place I think he can get to is like Ian Clark in 2017, where, you know,
right.
you can not going to be a starter.
That wasn't even in my head at all. That's a good reach. That's good.
Yeah. No, like, it's like, I'm saying like someone like that who you can, maybe he's not going to start. Maybe he's not going to, you know, close the game, but you can throw him out there for 15 minutes. He can play at like the start of the fourth quarter and be at least serviceable. That if Jordan Poole can get to that point, which I think he can, then I can trust him. Those are the main ones. The roster, it's tough to do that analysis that you were talking about just because the roster is in so much flux right now that it's hard to figure out who is going to be on the team next year. Because, you know, when the season kind of came to this halt, the roster was kind of in this weird period of turnover with like all these 10-day contracts and guys who might not be on the team next year. So it's hard to figure that out. But like the most of the players you've already named are the guys who are there. What do you think about Lee and Chris?
So I would prefer Chris like as a back of five. So I would love for, so if we're going into the throwback Warriors days from a few years ago, I would love for Marquise Chris to play like the JaVale McGee type.
I was thinking the exact same thing.
Like,
yeah,
lobs, and he can certainly play well. I think once you play him too much past a certain point, I think his effectiveness might go down a little bit. But he certainly is has an effective place on the roster. Like he certainly makes you honest. I'm also one of the things I do like about him, maybe even a little more than JaVale, is if he does get switched out, I don't want to say James Harden, but like on a, I mean, that's not a fair comparison, but if he does get switched out, like on a skilled perimeter player, I think he can hold his own. He has like long arms, big, light and long wingspan. He can move his feet pretty well. So I don't think he would totally get exposed defensively, especially not the way like Boogie Cousins did last year. But I would love to see us. I mean, I know there was a report that came out yesterday that the Warriors are higher on Okongwu than Wiseman.
Mm-hmm.
So like, if we drafted Okongwu, then I would feel better about the center spots. But if not, I would love for us to get a guy like Aaron Baines. Hopefully he wouldn't break Steph Curry's hand again.
Yeah.
But, you know, just some bruising. Actually, that might be my preferred route. I mean, you know, to have one guy who's kind of like big, bruisey, like, you know, big bruising.
Mm-hmm.
You can kind of mix it up, and then if you want to match up differently, you can put in sort of the long athletic center, and we can sort of match up differently. So that's, but I think Marquise, I would love one more centerpiece. But then, yeah, then we can go small with Looney, we can go smaller with Draymond. So we have all sorts of options. Yeah. Obviously, Aaron Baines has been in big playoff games with the Celtics too. So I would, but yeah. So to answer your question, Marquise Chris, I feel good, and I want to add one more piece.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'm so glad you brought it back around to that, actually, because
yeah,
I'm also, I think, higher on Okongwu than I am on Wiseman. But the broader point is I would rather see the Warriors not draft a center if they're going to pick someone in the draft. I would rather them go out and get someone for the minimum or the mid-level exception or something like that and have it be like, I like an Aaron Baines who, in addition to being with the Celtics, which important to remember, he was also with the Spurs before that. So he can
right. So
has more playoff experience, and I think that is that guy who can fill that role and give them a different look. And I would rather see them get a big man with that veteran experience. I think that's if they're going to when they're because they do need another big man, and if they're going to acquire someone, I'd rather see them do it that way. So
anyone other than Baines near the top of your list if we were to go that route?
He's the first one that comes to mind. There are a couple of others. I'd have to go back and check the free agency board on that one. Give me a minute to do that, and we can get back to that. Also, if we're shifting like to the perimeter, what do you think about Dewey?
So, last thing I'll say really quick is just, and we'll talk more about it, like, but with the stoppage, since teams will be less willing to spend money, and now the Warriors officially rake in more money than any other team in America besides the Dallas Cowboys, I think that they might be like. Like some players might take a 1 year mid-level contract just so they can be a free agent again next summer when they can actually make what they're worth.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the Warriors could get maybe a Serge Ibaka, maybe. That would be – Serge Ibaka would be my dream. But as for Damian Lee, I like him. I actually think I would love for us to – I don't know. I mean, Jordan Poole, he's a nice player. I think Damian Lee has potential as a backup point guard. I think he can run the offense. He's like pretty good off the dribble.
Yeah,
he can obviously knock down an open shot. I think he can be a plenty fine, plenty good, a very serviceable backup point guard. If I'm five stars confident on Pascal, I'm like I'd say I'm 4.5 stars confident on Lee and 4 on Chris.
And the thing I think is important to remember about Damian Lee is he can give you that 3-point shooting off the bench when Steph and Clay have to sit. So I just looked up the free agent centers. Nerlens Noel, I think, is someone who might be able to fit. as kind of that bigger guy, that bigger man in the middle type, rather than the long range athletic guy. Kyle O'Quinn is a free agent this year, so I think that's another thing to look out for. I don't know. Do you have opinions on either of those guys? Or
so Nolan Snowell, he hasn't really been a productive player. I was actually high on him coming out of Kentucky, but I mean, especially maybe for a minimum, but Aaron Baines, like with a veteran pedigree, I think he would fit our roster really well. Mm-hmm. Plus, I mean, he's Australian.
Yeah.
He's Australian also.
Yeah.
I was going to say we've had good success with Australian. I was saying Australian, Stephen Adams is New Zealandish. That's right. I don't know. I think there's also an interesting sort of parallel too. I mean, I don't want us to draft a center, but if we are going all in on like winning a title sometime in the next 2 to 3 years, and I've seen a lot of people make good points on Twitter and various articles that wings take longer to develop. So it might, you know, if we're going to draft someone like Isaac Okoro, who I really like, a lot of people have said that he reminds them of Iguodala. I'm not sure when he might come along versus a center. You know, the responsibilities are more condensed, so they might be able to come in and make an impact faster. So then maybe we draft a center and then sign a veteran wing who's already established. You know, they'll have to make those determinations, but it's definitely something to keep in mind. I would also love for us to sign like a Jay Crowder, just like solid, can play defense, can shoot the three decently enough.
Yeah, and I also think for the wing consideration, Kelly Oubre is one of those player names who's been bounced around a lot in talking about the TPE, the trade player exception. So
that actually, I'm glad you mentioned his name. Can we go over like a dream offseason scenarios? Just like,
yeah, sure, yeah, let's do it.
Okay, so this is what I come up with. So okay, we dream scenario. First, we win the lottery, number one overall pick. Let's say the Knicks are like third, fourth, whatever. Hopefully, like we trade back with the Knicks. Go from 1 to 3 or 4. They sort of like what the Mavs and Hawks did with the Trae Young, Luka Doncic, and the Mavs got the Hawks got Trae Young, but they also got a future pick. So we trade back with the Knicks to get an asset for a future year. Then we trade back with the Suns from let's say to like 11 or 12. Hopefully they give us Kelly Oubre. Maybe we give them like our first round pick next year. Then we trade back. We get my guy Aaron Nesmith, and then we can trade Oubre and someone like a Jordan Poole for Miles Turner. Because number one, the Pacers front court is already crowded, and number two, their owner is only worth like $2 billion, so they are not going to pay only worth $2 billion. But they are not going to go heavy into the luxury tax. And obviously, everyone's hurting financially right now, so maybe it sounds cold blooded to like pounce on somebody. Pounce on an owner for not being able to afford his guys, but they're gonna have to extend Victor like Oladipo soon. And trust me when I tell you, you know, from when I visited my grandma Susan in Indiana, if they get rid of Victor Oladipo, they will riot. Like they love Victor the same way the Bay Area loves Steph Curry. Like if it's Miles Turner Oladipo, like it's Oladipo every time. Plus they already have Sabonis, their front court's already crowded. So I think like a nice wing to complement sort of Oladipo and Brogdon as a backcourt, I think they would really take. And Poole as like throwing like a second round pick. But that way, I think the three things that we want this offseason, we want future assets to keep us good for a while. We want something to help us this coming year. And hopefully it has to be like within a certain price range. Mm-hmm. So if we can accomplish all of those things. And I know part of my scenario relies on the Knicks being stupid. But that seemed to be something that everyone can count on in the past. So
So are you saying that we then like the Warriors then use the Knicks pick that they just traded for, or is that part of the trade?
So we would trade from like 1 to 3 or 4 with the Knicks. Then we would trade from the Knicks pick back to the Suns pick. So the Suns would give us Kelly Oubre in exchange for a first round pick for us, and they get to trade up for. The Knicks pick was. So we trade back with the Knicks first to get an asset. Then we trade back from the Knicks to the Suns to get Kelly Oubre. And then maybe we give them like our first round pick next year since it's not going to be super high. And then we trade Oubre and like someone like a Jordan Poole to get Miles Turner.
Mm-hmm. But that's interesting. I think it would work The only question is, what role does do you think? So Miles Turner then becomes the starting center,
100%.
I guess, or
yep.
And then, but the problem is he is that long rangey guy that we were just talking about a minute ago. I think sort of similar to Marquise Chriss, obviously a better player. I'm not arguing that. But then where does
he can shoot.
Yeah. And then, so the question is, where does that big guy come in? Where's the man in the middle in that situation? Because I do think it's not a huge part of championship success in the East, but it is a part. I think you still need that. So where does, my question is then on top of that, where does that person come in that you can?
That's interesting. I mean, listen, Okongwu might be there at 13. Yeah. I mean, then we wouldn't trade and sign. You know, that's interesting. I mean, there's certainly guys I'm sure we could pick up over the course of the season. I don't know. I mean, there's certainly, yeah, no, that's definitely a fair point. I know. I mean, he's been in contention for, you know, the all defensive team the last several years. I've watched some clips of him against Giannis and Anthony Davis, and he defends very well. And again, what I like about him and just like Marquese Chriss, is if he gets switched out onto a perimeter player, like, the Warriors are not screwed to, you know. I mean, look, in the finals last year, when Cousins would get switched out, didn't you want to just, like, hide your eyes because you were just like, oh, crap, like, what's about to happen? So I don't think that I think he could defend well both on the perimeter and inside the paint. So
mm-hmm.
And as far as the bruising center, that's certainly, you know, I mean, do we need someone to? Do the Warriors need someone to match up with, like, Dwight Howard? I don't know.
I think
Miles Turner could. I think he could do a decent enough job.
Every championship team needs one player who's willing to just throw their weight around a little bit. You know, even if it's just for 10 minutes a game. I think that's just an important enough part of the playoffs where you need
that guy. That's totally legit. What about Alan Smilich?
Yeah, he's more of a.
No, he's
small forward, power forward type, you know, more explosive than big.
Pretty thick, but no, I got you.
Yeah, and he's still so raw. He has a few years to go before he's far along enough to.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
All right, what do you think about the draft then? If we're gonna pick, you know, first, or if we're gonna pick 4, 5, 6, or if we're gonna trade back to like 10 or 11, what players should we look for, value wise, where we're.
You know, yeah,
where our needs are.
Yeah, I mean, I think that all depends on where they end up picking, obviously. But if one person I'm really high on actually is Deni Avdija from Israel. He's someone who's, I think, really interesting. His style of play and, like, sort of the scouting reports I've read remind me somewhat of Andre Iguodala, actually, of someone who can.
Interesting.
Someone who's a taller guy who can still handle the ball, give ball handling, point guard relief. You know, capable of knocking down the three, not a huge part of his game, but can do it. Can be at least a reliable defender, maybe not elite, but you can put him on a lot of different players and a lot of different positions and trust him. And then someone who just makes really good decisions, high basketball IQ, and just someone who you just can trust not to turn the ball over and just be steady. And, like, one of those guys who you expect is plus minus to be really high. You know how Iguodala's plus minus just every year was off the charts. And I think,
you know, he would average like 5 points a game. We'd be like, how is his, but he would be coming in. No.
Exactly. And I think with Avdija, obviously it would take a few years. He needs some development, but I think he can grow into that turn of player at a certain point. That's kind of his ceiling. So that's someone I'd be really interested in seeing. If you go farther down the draft, Nesmith, as you mentioned, I think is very intriguing. Sadiq Bey is a name I've heard tossed around a little bit, who intrigues me a lot, who I think would be very interesting to fit into the Warrior system. So if you're going down for those guys, those might be guys to look out for.
Yeah. So I was just looking for this message. I used to work at a summer camp where my co-counselor was a huge basketball fan and who was Israeli, and he was the whole summer. The summers that we were counselors, it was the summer that Luka Doncic got drafted, and I'd heard a little bit about him, but I didn't really know that much. And like the whole summer, he was like Luka Doncic is going to be a superstar. He's a superstar, like, all, like, over and over and over. So mm-hmm. I was like, I mean, at a certain point, I was like, okay, he's probably good, but like he's probably a little overrated. But sure enough, he turned out to be good. So I reached out to him and I asked about Denny. He was like, yeah. He's like, he said, he's like, you know, he can definitely, he's not Luka, but he can definitely be an all-star in a few years, and he can be a solid bench contributor right away, like, on a playoff team.
What I want to know is, why did you say the first thing with the accent, the second thing without the accent?
Well, because the second thing was it was like over text.
Oh, so okay.
I was like, hey, Saul, like, you told me all about Luka and you were spot on. Like, I texted him. That's why I was trying to look on my phone to see if I could find it.
Okay.
I think my phone like updated, so like it's some things get like attachments get deleted. Uh-huh. But I was gonna try and like, as you were talking, I was gonna try and like read, go on and read it. But no, Israelis have excellent accents, man. I was gonna say too, he reminds me a little bit of Danilo Gallinari.
Uh-huh.
Not just because they're white, but I think their games are actually similar. Also too, just the way his sort of style of play, he moves without the ball very well. He can pass. He can switch. He's 6'8", long wingspan. He cuts a lot. Like, I think in terms of like someone who could like know our style of play and just pick it up right away, I think there's no question he would fit the best in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. And they after Wiggins, the wing depth is pretty up in the air. So that could be where they look for the production. And we'll see.
I mean, and we would both agree, like, they have to get another wing.
Yeah,
they're in the draft or in free agency. Like they need a wing, a center, and a backup point guard. Or you can slide Damian Lee there. But look, I mean, next year we could be looking at, you could have, like, potentially, you could have Seth Clay, Wiggins, Draymond, Miles Turner. You know, you could have Damian Lee, like Aaron Nesmith, Pascal, Draymond, Looney, Chris. I mean, that's like 11 solid players right there.
Yeah.
Maybe like plus a Jay Crowder potentially. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, for sure.
So, you know, I mean, what made the Warriors so good in 2015 and 16, obviously Steph, Clay, and Draymond were amazing. But, man, like, you know, like the Barbosas and the Iguodalas and the Livingstons, they would rip teams to shreds when Steph was on the bench. So, So yeah, listen, I think the Warriors, I feel good. If they can be competent with their roster construction this summer, I think they can climb back into contention. Before we move on to the next topic, what do you think that they could, how far could they go next season? How far will they go?
The Warriors? Man, that's so tough to say, because it depends. It depends so much, I think, on what happens to the Lakers, given sort of everything with how their roster holds together and whether or not they can sustain it for another year. But this is definitely a, the Warriors next year could definitely be a team that makes a deep run in the playoffs, I think. They definitely have that capability. And it's hard to say, because it depends so much on health, especially with guys like Looney. Does Looney stay healthy? Because he, I think, will be a huge part of whether or not that team, I think he's very underrated. I think he'd be an incredibly important part of whether or not that team can make a run. So,
yeah. Do we beat the Rockets in the playoffs last year without him? I don't think we do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. There you go.
I mean, especially, you know, like, remember like in the game five when KD got injured, he was, you know, if someone would have told us years ago that in the middle of a playoff game towards the end of the series that Warriors fans would be going like, Looney, like, I was like, wait, we're shooting for Kevon Looney?
Uh-huh.
But like, he deserved it. It was completely, you know, it was totally.
Yeah.
Like
it. So. No, it is, and it's just, obviously his rookie year back in 2016, there's like a lot of injury problems, and it's just sort of always been a fluctuating thing ever since. So if he stays healthy, that'll be a really big part of whatever ends up happening, I think. So,
okay. Absolutely. So, okay. Let's stick with the Warriors, sort of.
Okay.
There was a big, you know, I guess when you're in quarantine and there's no games going on at all, like no sports other than UFC, the best way to fill time is to make the, 873rd all-time list of all time. So one just came out. I think CBS Sports came out with one. ESPN came out with one. We'll focus on the ESPN one for now. There was a few big points of contention. Of course, you had MJ at one. Thank God, rightly so. You had LeBron, I would argue, too high at number two. And then you had Steph at 13, KD 14. You had James Harden 32. What was your biggest agreement and biggest disagreement with the forming of said list?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreement. Starting there, Jordan is number one. I think that's obviously the right call. There was a quote that came out. I don't know if you saw this from his agent that said, like, if you can watch The Last Dance and you're not legally blind and you don't think Michael Jordan is the GOAT, you should start watching Roller Derby or something like that. That wasn't exactly what he said, but I agree with that, basically. I mean, and not just because of the Last Dance, as incredible as that has been to watch. Just, I think pretty close to every argument you can make, the two-way playing, the winning, the ability to just carry a team through so much, I think puts Jordan at number one all time. Another thing I agreed with on the list, this one's kind of random, but Karl Malone was placed 17th, which I think is like right around where he should be. Just like, because I think he's a really tough one to calculate, is how do you calculate somebody who's number two scorer of all time, one of the most dominant post players of all time, the master of the pick and roll, all this incredible stuff, but never won. You know, never won an NBA championship, made the finals a couple times, mm-hmm. You know, consistently made the playoffs just about every year of his career, but never got that ring. That's a situation I think is really tough to rank. But I think sort of right outside the top 15, I think the ranking ended up nailing that one.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because I've sort of kind of maintained for a while that James Harden is the Karl Malone of this era. What do you see about like that comparison? Do you think it's apt, or like, I mean, obviously their games are totally different, but mm-hmm. in terms of how they'll be looked at after the careers are over, especially with their placement in their era, do you think that's like a fair comparison?
I think at the moment, yes. I think, but Harden is only 30, so I mean, he has a few more years left in him for sure, and we'll have to see.
He's never going to win a title. But continue.
What?
That James Harden's never going to win a title. But
you don't think so? That's your bold prediction?
I don't think it's that bold. I mean, I watched him play in the playoffs. I mean, I don't think he's going to win a title.
Mm-hmm. So. I don't know, but I think
he could.
At the moment, I think it makes sense. I think we'll have to wait the next few years, because you know, one championship can change everything. I mean, it can change your status, your legacy so much. Like, how much higher is Charles Barkley ranked on all-time lists if he wins one championship? You know, how much higher is...
How much lower is Dirk Nowitzki ranked if he didn't win in 2011?
That too. Yeah, exactly. And it goes both directions. So...
Absolutely.
When you combine those things, I think... For the moment, I kind of see your point about Harden. But he was ranked 32nd, which actually kind of leads me to one of my major disagreements. How is Giannis already the 27th best player of all time? To me, that is so absurd to me. He's had four great years, but only four great years. How is he above Stockton? How is he above Isaiah? How is he above Harden even? Like,
they're wrong, but they're just so he. There's no way he should be above Harden.
Yeah,
they're just projecting like what he's going to be. They're just putting him there too soon. People made Steph a top 20 player of all time after his unanimous MVP, or when he'd been an all-star like three times. Like, it's too soon. Look, I mean, we were texting about this the other day. They, at the top 50 players of all time in 1997, mm-hmm. at the all-star game.
Yeah.
They put Shaq there, and he'd only been in the league for 5 years.
Yeah.
You know, only been in the league. So, but
I think that's ridiculous too.
Oh, 100%. Me too. Absolutely.
I mean, so I think longevity is such a huge factor. Great. It's not the only factor, because, you know, there are guys who played, you know, 12, 13 years who are absolutely right up there with,
I mean, MJ, both Magic Johnson and MJ, Michael Jordan, or I mean, they both played, Magic played, I want to say 11, and Michael played 13, 12, and they're both in the top 10 probably of all time.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But yeah.
So.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
Another disagreement I was just going to say is they had Dwayne Wade ranked lower than Scottie Pippen, which I don't agree. Wade did it all for longer. He much better offensive player. Now, obviously, Scottie was definitely the better defender, but Wade was not exactly a slouch on that end. And he did it for a longer period of time. You know, Scottie had like 8 or 9 really good years. Wade had 13 or 14. So I think when you compare those,
LeBron never has any help. Wait, what? I thought LeBron never had any help. Oh, I'm sorry. Never mind. Continue. Sorry. Go ahead.
No, I mean, I think that's just what you're saying. And it's obviously that feeds into the narrative a little bit of the whole Jordan versus LeBron debate. But I think that Wade has to be higher on the all-time list. Just finals MVP, won a championship. I mean, he won a championship without LeBron, mm-hmm. you know, like he back in 06. So he just did it for longer, did it with different guys. Better, more complete all-around player, I think. And that's sort of the way I see it.
Yeah, you know, I thought was too low, which I sort of hate to admit, because I don't. He bugs me, but actually, I thought Chris Paul was too low. I believe he was at 40. I want to say 39. Do you have the list in front of you?
I had it up a minute ago. Let me pull it back up.
I have it up, but I didn't print out like one by one. But yeah, I believe he was around 40. Stephen Curry or Kevin Durant? Ooh.
I think it's Steph at 13th and KD at 14th, which I don't agree with. But
yeah, I know, me neither. I think KD might be the better player. Actually, I think they're both too high.
Yeah,
I think KD might be the better player, but I think greater is Steph Curry.
I think it's like so close. You could honestly almost flip a coin. I think KD should be like the tiniest bit higher. He's a better two-way player. He's a more versatile scorer, and I think just the slightly better finals performer. So when you put it all together, like KD maybe like 19, Steph at 20 or something like that on the all-time list. I think that sounds.
I thought 13 or 14. Again, Steph's been a great player for 6 or 7 years.
Right.
KD's been. I would give it to KD because KD was on the 2008 Olympic team and was great.
Yeah.
I think KD's longevity's been a little better, a lot better. I was gonna say a quick note about Chris Paul before we sort of go full into the Steph KD thing.
Yeah, he was number 40.
He's number 40. Man, that's. I know he's never been the best player on a Western Conference Finals team, but like the dude has been.
I mean, he's the best point guard in the league for several years.
For what, 7 or 8 years? And I know, like, Steph has clowned him and he's taken him to school for years, so it kind of makes him look bad. But, I mean, if you look at all the situations that he succeeded in, he was kind of the lone wolf, sort of with David West in New Orleans. They were a really good playoff team. Then, you know, there was a lot of dysfunction with the Clippers. He played great there, although they obviously underachieved. And then now, look, with Houston and OKC, he's played for the most part very well. I think 40, even though, again, both my dad and I have problems with his sort of just overall style of play, I think he's too low. I just want to add a few comments to the MJ Jordan debate about why it's not even close. So I just want to read off a few statistics that I know we both have in our notes app. But, LeBron has never beaten 350 win teams in any playoff run that he's ever had. Jordan's done it four separate times, 92, 93, 97, and 98. So if you want to talk about a competition, I just think Jordan's had it tougher. If you go from 2011 to 2018, there's 40 first team all NBA spots, right? Eight years times five spots, 40 spots, right? Mm-hmm. LeBron's made, because he's great, obviously, LeBron made the first team All-NBA 8 of those times. So if you take that out, there's 32 other spots.
Yeah.
For first team All-NBAers in that year. Do you want to take a guess how many of those 32 spots were filled by Eastern Conference players?
In the course of an 8-year period?
From 2011 to 2018. The 8 years in a row that LeBron went to the finals.
Okay, how many of the remaining 32 All-NBA first-team spots?
Yeah, so there's 40 overall. He was there for all 8 years because he's amazing. Mm. But the other 32 spots from those 8 years, how many of those 32 were by players from the Eastern Conference?
Okay, I'm thinking. I know Dwight Howard made it a couple times. I'm gonna say Joakim made it at least once. D. Rose made it at least once. Paul George might have made it one time. I'll say 10.
Cold.
Tell me.
Four.
Four?
Four. Yep.
Who are they?
So I believe I need to go exactly what year, but I think Dwight twice, Joakim and D Rose, and that's it.
Oh, okay. So Paul George never made it in that.
Not the first team. He's never made it over KD, and then he also ended up in the Western Conference.
Yeah.
At 2016, God, every year is time is so weird right now. But
yeah,
so My point is to say, and there's plenty of other numbers we could get into, and we will in future podcasts, but that LeBron's competition has not, you know, has not exactly been, you know, like, you know, the White Walkers for anyone right. who watches Game of Thrones.
You know, and I would argue he's had more help than Jordan had. I mean, Jordan's greatest teammate ever was Pippen. His second greatest teammate was Rodman. And then who comes after that? Like, there aren't, like, it's like a cast of role players after that, whereas LeBron has had Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, Kevin Love, Kyrie Irving, Anthony Davis. I mean, like, just this, you can name a lot more of LeBron's teammates.
So not only that, but if you want to go, and I get that the eras are different, but in terms of, like, scoring help, Jordan has carried 5 of the 8 lowest supporting cast, scoring cast titles.
Yep.
He's also carried 3 of the 5. Sorry. Yeah, he's carried 3 of the 5. He's carried 5 of the 8 lowest supporting, lowest scoring supporting cast. He's carried 4 of the 6 lowest scoring supporting cast. He's also carried 3 of the lowest 5 and the lowest 2 scoring supporting casts ever.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of dragging people along when you know help isn't coming your way, I think MJ, not only does MJ fit better with good players, not only is he more willing to fit within a system, but when, you know, when fit hits the Shan, he can you know, take over and drag his team to the finish line, I think, better than LeBron can. And again, when you're you know, amongst the greatest of the great, like, you have to nitpick, I would say, right. a lot. I mean, if you're gonna, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, let's before we move on towards the NFL and before we sort of change leagues, I'm gonna go in a little more about the Steph and KD thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I think the Warriors, even though they've been bad for a year now, they're still all the rage. What do you sort of make of Steph's place in history? Why do you think he's so polarizing? Because I you know, I sent you the let's see, maybe we can screen share it, but we don't have to. I remember I sent you the tweet a few days ago about how there was a radio host from Houston named Adam Clayton who said, there's no way he's a top 25. Anyone else who says he is should be stripped of their credibility. Meanwhile, some people think he's top 10. Like, have you ever seen someone as polarizing from one way to the other? Like, what do you make of his place in history? It's just so,
you know, there's a couple who come close, but he's kind of up there. I think one of the big things is that flash. I think we have to flash back to like 2013, right after LeBron wins that second title with Miami, with that obvious that unbelievable series against San Antonio, the 7-game thriller. Obviously, we can talk about the whole Ray Allen thing in Game 6. But with that being said, LeBron was unbelievable in Game 7. Stepped up, did what he needed to do, got it done. Wins his second ring. At the time, he was only, I think, 28. So he was kind of right on track. Jordan followed a similar trajectory. So right on track there. Everyone started talking about, is he going to become the undisputed GOAT? Not even is it going to even be a debate in a few years? And then this skinny 6'3", 180-pound kid from LeBron's, also born in LeBron's hometown, from this
right.
nothing college, which had one tournament.
Same hospital, too.
Same hospital, yeah, that's right. And then
if anyone hasn't seen the Jimmy Kimmel skit about that, you should check it out. Sorry, go ahead.
This kid becomes the centerpiece of a team that wins 3 out of 4 against LeBron, who the media is building this narrative around, and all of a sudden, LeBron has 3 titles instead of 5 or 6. And I think when you can do that, and that's also, I think, a lot where the finals MVP narrative is kind of coming around, because they're looking for something to use against him. Because when this kid shows up out of nowhere and just sort of becomes the darling of the league against the guy who everyone was hyping up to become the greatest of all time, that is going to piss some people off. And I think that's the main thing. I don't know. What do you want to, do you have anything else?
I think there's a lot to say about, you know, you can make the argument that the reason, or at least the big, there's plenty of reasons, but the biggest reason that LeBron isn't the greatest of all time is because of Steph Curry. And they can't stand that it's the skinny 6'3 point guard. He's the one who kept him from, you know, it's sort of like with KD, and I've heard folks like Ethan Strauss sort of like perpetuate this notion a lot. Like when KD beats you or KD scores on you, you're just so much bigger and taller that as a defender, you're just like, nah, nothing I can do. But when Steph beats you, he like fakes you out, kind of tricks you, just kind of outsmarts you, whatever. So it's more like, oh man, I just, it doesn't, you don't feel as just helpless or as defeated when Steph beats you. And so I think there's like a sort of a this condescending look towards Steph, like, he's the one who beats LeBron. Oh, give me a break. Steph, no. Because people are not – that's not what a superstar is supposed to look like. It goes back to when Steph has a bad game in the playoffs, he gets more thrown his way than other great players because it looks – his bad games just look aesthetically worse than other players' bad games because he's so small. So when he plays poorly, it's going to look worse. I mean, look, Giannis was terrible in the Eastern Conference Finals last year. And because he's big and strong and he dunks so macho, people didn't really say as much. So I think Steph, you know, look, I thought Kawhi dominated him way more than LeBron dominated Steph in the finals in 2016. But, you know, no one, you know, people saw that Giannis is a better player coming into the season. They had him, like, ahead of Kawhi. Mm-hmm. Like some people did. So I think it's that, you know, look, I think definitely you're right. The NBA media narrative definitely revolves around LeBron. And anyone who dare shall infringe and dare try and, you know, win titles themselves will be frowned upon and trying to, you know, pushed away. So I definitely think, you know, that does apply to stuff, but also, I don't know. Katie hasn't gotten the same hate because he's like supposed to do that because he's so tall and big, versus Steph is not looked at as someone who's supposed to do that. So then there's going to be more, you know, are you kidding me? There's going to be more of an are you kidding me type of attitude when he stops the king from claiming his throne that has never and will never belong to him. So.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think the media, the narratives, obviously, the media obviously creates a lot of the narratives. And I think that's we're seeing that kind of with this situation. Just one more thing I want to talk about the ESPN all-time list. Do you have any, like, sort of big hot takes that you want to
about? Yeah, that's right. I have Tim Duncan higher on the all-time list than LeBron James.
Tell
15
me why.
15 all-defensive teams. No one else in the league, in history of the league, has 12. LeBron only has 6. LeBron has 5. First-team all-defensive teams. Tim Duncan has 8. I think Kobe has – the most all-time is 9. Duncan has 8. Again, if we're talking about health, look, I really like Tony Parker. Manu Ginobili is one of my favorite players of all time. But would you agree? Neither one of them are top 50 all-time players.
Yeah,
like they're both Hall of Famers. Great. I like, you know, I know your dad. Like we all like respect the Spurs so much, and they're great players. But they're not top 50, right?
I don't think so.
So again, Tim Duncan in his career has beaten 20 50-win teams in the playoffs. LeBron's beaten 13. Okay, Tim Duncan's done it, as we just said, with less help. Now, yes, if you want to pick out 2007 or 2015, if you want to pick out a specific year, sure, there has been a couple of years where LeBron has had less help than Tim Duncan. But over the totality of their career, not only has Duncan's defensive impact been one of the greatest of all time, but he's gone up against tougher teams, won more with more difficult players. And I don't want to always come back to the finals record because – I don't want to be like 6-0, 3-6. You know, everyone says that. But, you know, look, like MJ lost before the finals, so it's not like should we punish someone for getting to the finals. So I don't want to go too much on that. But the reality is when you lose in the finals over and over again, it devalues how many finals trips you go to because it says if you were in the other conference, you wouldn't go to the finals by definition. If you're losing to the best team from the other conference over and over again, then that basically means maybe the matchups will be different, but that basically means you would not go to the finals if you were in the other conference, which sort of devalues if you keep losing the finals, then your trips to the finals become
right.
Less.
No, I get what you're saying.
And
yeah.
That's impressive to me. Mm-hmm. So, again, Tim Duncan lost once. I would argue over the three finals matchups, Tim Duncan was the better player. In the three head-to-head matchups between LeBron and Tim Duncan, Tim Duncan was the better player. Dude, Tim Duncan's been on 15 All-NBA teams too. I think LeBron's been on 14, 15 maybe. But, you know, Tim Duncan is just ridiculously and unfairly maligned and underrated in the way that he should be. I don't even think him and Kobe is close. It's close. I don't think it's even I think it's obvious who I would take.
Mm-hmm. Here's what I will say about that. And I'm not going to
Duncan and Kobe or Duncan and LeBron?
Just Duncan and the rest of the players kind of on in that for the first tier of greatness on the all-time list is yeah. Michael Jordan has has the Jordan logo with him jumping out, extending the ball. LeBron has these flying, soaring dunks. Kareem has the sky hook. Kobe has the turnaround and the freakish athleticism. Tim Duncan has a bank shot. Tim Duncan has really good post defense. You know, Tim Duncan was not the marketable superstar and the flashy guy the way all those others were. It is a lot harder to use a highlight reel to show why Tim Duncan is so good. And I think that unfairly, but nonetheless, takes him down a little bit. And in the eyes of a lot of people, makes him seen as worse. And that is, I'm saying, again, that's not fair because he is one of the most consistent day-in, day-out players in NBA history.
No, listen, I totally agree. And look, you know, he's certainly not someone you're going to go back and watch and be like, whoa, like that bank shot from 12 feet. Like, oh my God, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you know, listen, you're totally right. And look, aesthetics, I mean, they do matter, even if it's subconscious. Look, there's no question you're right. But especially, too, if you want to take in this like leadership drama, you know, all the stories that Pop and has told and that have come out. We've both heard Steve Kerr tell them about how Tim Duncan would let Pop, you know, yell at him, rat him out, treat him like every other player, which at the tone, that meant like no other player could complain about Pop yelling at him, getting on him. If Tim Duncan, like the all-time great all-star MVP, was doing it. So that set a really good tone for their culture and for their team chemistry. And look, if a coach tried to chew out LeBron, do you think that would go well? I don't. So in terms of leadership, chemistry, intangibles, I mean, I would take Tim Duncan every day of the week and twice on Sunday over LeBron. Although LeBron, that part of LeBron's game has come on the second half of his career, especially his second stint in Cleveland. But in terms of totality of his career, and I know LeBron came in as a young player versus Tim Duncan came in as a four-year college player. But look, we're talking about NBA careers. So, but in terms of intangibles too, I think Tim Duncan over the course of his career has outperformed LeBron James. So should we bring in your little bro?
Yeah, I will let him know.
Yeah, so
it's time to come on. We're gonna move on. We're gonna go away from basketball, head into football a little bit. Obviously, the NFL schedule came out just a few days ago, and obviously a lot of really cool stuff. Always interesting to break down there, especially now that the draft has happened. Teams making their moves. We're gonna talk about cool stuff to watch. Primetime games. MVP, go into a little fantasy, should be all good stuff to check out.
Yeah, you any before Andrew jumps on, do you have any first thoughts on the schedule that came out? Anything that you're most excited for the season?
I'm really
excited for there to be a season, by the way, first of all.
Yeah, jeez, for sure. Kind of a little bit of an off the board one. I'm obviously interested to see how Brady and Gronk do in Tampa.
Of course.
I think one team that's going to be really interesting to watch this season is the Packers. All the stories that have come out about Aaron Rodgers, I know they drafted Jordan Love, and there were stories about Rodgers and his relationship with the coaching staff in the front office last year, and it'll be really interesting to check out, I think, where that team is and just track them over the course of the season.
Yeah. All right, so we have our football correspondent.
That's right. My brother, Andrew Hutton, joining us right now.
Brother what's Andrew Hutton. Okay, Andrew.
Yes.
Football thoughts. Go.
I'm super excited. You know, I'm hoping that we can play this season, and because you know, football season's the best time of year when, like, you know, you have college and the NFL. So, right now, I'm hoping we play.
All right. So, Andrew, what are your thoughts about, say, you know, your top five primetime games? What games are you most looking forward to?
So one game that I'm really looking forward to is the Week 6 Monday Night Football matchup, which is Cardinals at Cowboys. Now, that might be a little bit of a sleeper, because when you think about those two teams playing, you don't think about, like, you know, big, you know, like
rivalry,
lots of wins teams. But I think that Kyler Murray is definitely dipped his toes in, felt out the waters of the NFL, and he's going to have a big season this year. And obviously, the Cardinals just got DeAndre Hopkins, and that will work really well with Cliff Kingsbury because he's a very offensive-minded coach. And but at the same time, the Cowboys also, you know, they just drafted CeeDee Lamb from Oklahoma, who's arguably the best receiver in the draft. They already have Amari Cooper at wide receiver, Dak Prescott, Ezekiel Elliott has already proven himself as definitely like a top five running back in the league, and which is why I think that that will make for a really good game. The one thing about it is neither team has an amazing defense, but the Cowboys did just sign HaHa Clinton Dix in the offseason, Dontari Poe in the offseason, and Gerald McCoy. So it kind of looked like they were loading up their defense. And I think that this week six Monday Night Football will be a good matchup.
Nice. What do you think about Dak's contract? Is he going to be a Cowboy 2 years from now? Yes or no?
I think so. Yes. I think he's going to stick with him. Because also, I think him and Mike McCarthy are going to work well. Mike McCarthy has shown he can win games. He 100%. Took the Packers to a Super Bowl and won the Super Bowl. He had like 9 playoff berths, the Packers. So I think that, yes, it'll be,
right. Be good. All right. To take us through the rest of your primetime games. And yeah.
So next, I think
why they excite you.
Packers at 49ers, Thursday Night Football, week 9, will be a really good matchup. Now, the last time those teams played, last season, both times.
Remind me, what happened?
Well, you know, the Niners won 37-8 in week 11. And then in the NFC Championship game, they won 37-20. And they were blowouts. But in my opinion, you can never rule Aaron Rodgers out. You know, he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league, and I would say arguably ever. So I think that it'll be a good matchup. I think one of the biggest points of the game is going to be if the Packers can stop the run game, because obviously, as we saw in the national championship game, Jimmy Garoppolo only had to throw 8 passes because Raheem Mostert just took over, and obviously the pass blocking of the 49ers is really good. So I think that Packers 49ers is going to be a good matchup if the Packers defense can come out strong.
The Packers, you know, one thing I was just mentioning about as you were coming onto the call is the whole story about the drama, you know, all the stuff that's coming out about Aaron Rodgers and his relationship with the team, especially now that they drafted Jordan Love. What do you make of that?
I think that, well, same thing kind of happened with him when he came into the league with Brett Favre. You know, Brett Favre was already on the Packers and they drafted Aaron Rodgers. So I think that Aaron Rodgers is going to be professional about it. I think he's going to – he probably, you know, serve as a mentor to Jordan Love. And we'll see what happens down the road. But I think for now, you know, everyone knows that Aaron Rodgers is the guy. But he is 36 years old, so that needs to be considered as well.
All right. Who's going to be with their team longer then, Aaron Rodgers or Dak Prescott?
I think Dak Prescott. I think Mike McCarthy is going to get that team to start winning games going into the playoffs, and I think that Dak Prescott will stay happy.
All right. What's the next one?
So next, I think that this is a really good one. It's Saints at Buccaneers, week 9 on Sunday night, and it's Brady versus Breeze, yep. Two, you know, no doubt Hall of Famers. And so it's just going to be super entertaining. And now, you know, two very good offenses. The Buccaneers got Gronk now. They have Mike Evans, Chris Godwin. Their running game wasn't amazing last year, but they just drafted Keyshawn Vaughn, who I think is pretty good. He went to Vanderbilt. And so that's going to be good. But obviously the Saints also have a super good offense, Drew Brees, Alvin Kamara, Michael Thomas. I just think it's going to be a really good offensive battle. And those two teams are also playing week 1 against each other, but it's also not a primetime game. So I think that maybe the week 1 game will have some effect on the week 9 game. So it's going to be interesting to see that dynamic.
Okay, nice. Listen, they're also playing week 1, I believe, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, I know that matchup, everyone is going to be excited for that.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
I think the NFC South, I think, will be the most fascinating and interesting division this year for sure.
Definitely, yeah.
Do you have the Sunday ticket package that allows you to watch sort of all the games, or Devin?
Oh, are you asking me?
Yeah, I was asking
you. I'm able to watch all the games. Absolutely. Say that.
I wasn't asking him. We live in the same house. I wasn't.
Okay. Well, no. Well, because you go. You go to college, so it's not like you guys aren't in the same place.
Well, you know,
like,
I know we don't have it here though. We get whatever the local game is happens to be that day. So yeah, so it's, you know, you gotta figure out how to. It's that's the really annoying thing is, like, especially since I'm down in LA for school, I can't watch all the Niners games. You know, so I gotta.
I'll send you a few links.
Okay.
All right, Andrew, what's next?
So next, I have a Christmas Day matchup, which I think will be really interesting. It's on a Friday, so it's a little different, but it's Christmas Day. It's Vikings at Saints. Now, that's a Week 16 game, and so one of the reasons I think it's going to be really interesting is I think there'll be a lot of playoff implications in that game because, you know, those two teams met each other in the wild card game last year, and it went into overtime. So I think that you know, Kirk Cousins doesn't have the greatest primetime record, but I think that, you know, he came up super clutch in the playoffs last year. Down the stretch, I think he'll do well, but obviously, you know, it's Drew Brees, so we'll have to see what happens with that one.
All right. Awesome.
You know, that playoff game last year was fascinating. So obviously before that, all know what happened there. So
Kirk Cousins came up big. Yeah. Kirk Cousins came up big.
Too bad he didn't come up big the next week, but that's okay. All right, yeah. What's next? You got one more?
I have one more, and I think this is probably the most entertaining on the list, I'll tell you that. And it's Chiefs at Ravens, and it's Week 3, Monday Night Football, Lamar Jackson versus Patrick Mahomes, the Super Bowl MVP versus the regular season MVP. I think it's just going to be really fun to watch, high-powered offenses. They both this year drafted top 5 pre-draft running backs, with the Chiefs getting Edwards-Helaire and the Ravens getting J.K. Dobbins. And so I just think that and also both the defenses are also both really good. So I think that it's going to be a really fun game to watch because both of those quarterbacks are so electrifying and just, like, amazing with what they can do. Lamar Jackson obviously has proven himself on the ground and as a passer. And Patrick Mahomes has one of the best arms in the league. So I think it's going to be really fun to watch.
Yeah, those are the two best teams in the AFC last year. And I think they're on track to do it again. So
yeah, definitely.
All right. Any surprise or teams or what storylines you looking forward to most heading into the season? And then Alexander and I will start to sort of wrap up our last couple segments.
Yeah.
Some interesting things I have. I think that this is an interesting take, but I think that the Dolphins are going to be good this year. They've had a lot of improvement on their defense. They had a huge defensive offseason. Obviously, they drafted Tua. And so I think that the Dolphins are going to be a team to watch. And I think the whole AFC East is going to be really interesting because the Patriots, and obviously they lost Brady, but Bill Belichick has a lot of confidence in Jared Stidham. And the Bills making the playoffs last year and almost winning in the playoffs. They had a big lead in that game, so it's going to be interesting to see how Josh Allen does. So I say that the AFC East is definitely one of the more interesting teams, divisions, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's a little more open. It's not the Brady Belichick show anymore.
Who are you? Who's going to win it then? You can always change your pick in September, but
true. I'm going to say the Bills right now. I think the Bills are going to win it behind Josh Allen.
I think Miami is going to win the division. I do. Alexander?
Whew, man. Give me the Bills now. Check back with me in September. Maybe we can readjust.
Okay. All right. Awesome. Andrew, thanks so much, man.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Hopefully the season happens.
Yes, we
can hold your feet to the fire if you screwed up any of your picks.
We'll definitely check back in on the pick at some point depending on everything else that happens. So
all right, you guys have a good one.
Thanks, Andrew, appreciate it.
All right, so we're gonna wrap up the show here with one more segment. We're always gonna try to close the show with some kind of interesting segment, not even necessarily related to the current news, just something we want to talk about a little bit. And this week, we're doing a segment we call Overrated or Underrated. In this bit, each of us is going to throw out a name of a player, and the other person is going to decide whether that person is currently overrated or underrated. Do you want to start? Do you want me to throw out the first player, or
you go? Well, that's what I want to say. We can always say it's underrated or overrated, but we can also say they're properly rated too.
That is true. Yeah, good point.
Go first.
Okay, I'm going to go Ben Simmons. Overrated or underrated?
That's a really good one. I think the point I'll make first too is I think players can go back and forth. So I think he used to be way overrated, people like Colin Cowherd, we're calling him like, you know, prodigies, this and that and the other. I think now he is underrated. He's a phenomenal defender. He's obviously one of the best passers in the league. I mean, to me, he can certainly be, with the right fit, which I don't think is Philly, he can be the second best player on a championship team. I do think that's his ceiling. He can definitely get there. I think all the, you know, he can be the next LeBron. Like, there are some people who are comparing him to LeBron. Like, stop. But look, a lot of rookies get lots of hype, and then, you know, how many guys are with, you know, the next Michael Jordan? I mean, we've heard that a thousand times. So I think initially he was overrated, and now he's become slightly, if not very, underrated. So What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, obviously he hasn't developed his jump shot yet. So that's still a work in progress, but I think he's going to keep working on that. And if he can do that, he's going to be a very sort of very all around player, a guy who you sort of have to fear on all aspects of the court. And when you can run an offense at 6'10", that's always dangerous. So
okay. Nice. Okay. My player for overrated or underrated would have to be Jason Tatum. What do you think about him?
Ooh, wow. That is a great question. It's fascinating with him that he was in a draft where everyone thought there was a clear top two players, and then he was
the third, right?
And he's turned into the best player out of that draft class thus far.
Which, that's, by the way, that's what I want the Warriors to pull off from the Knicks.
Mm-hmm.
Shreds, yeah. Mm-hmm. Shred him. Anyway, yeah, continue.
I'm going to say slightly underrated. I think that he is just growing and developing with every game, with every year, with every season, and that he is someone who's really turning into a do-it-all type player, someone who, you know, I mean, obviously the big highlight of his career, I think, was when he dunked on LeBron in that Eastern Conference Finals game a couple of years back.
Yeah, obviously,
I think that was
game seven, I want to say.
Yeah, it was, yeah. And obviously is the whole history with, obviously, the whole history with LeBron being a fan and going way back with him. So that was a really interesting moment. And I think he's turning into a player who can lead a team and be the main guy. You see what he's doing with Boston this year, obviously alongside Kemba and Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart and everybody else. But I think he is a really integral part of that team, and someone who, if the Celtics are going to contend and going to win a championship, he needs to be there. I don't think he can be swapped out for someone else with a similar playing style. I think he's such an important part of that team that he's someone who they would miss if he left or got injured or something like that.
Can he be the best player on a championship team within the next 3 years?
Within the next 3 years, I would say it's possible. Not at this exact moment, but if we check back in 3 years, I think he'd have a shot at that kind of capability. What do you think?
Yeah, maybe I listened to too much Bill Simmons. I think he's slightly overrated.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he can be the best player on a title team. I do love like his like sort of dog in him. There was a story, I think he went when they played the Clippers. He went and tapped Kawhi, and he went into the Clippers locker room pregame. And he went over to Kawhi Leonard. He tapped him on the knee and he said, "Hey Kawhi, it's gonna be a long night." So I love his bravado.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. I think his game is a little. He's a great scorer. I'm not in love with his ability to play make. So I think that'll hold him back. And he's still a little too small for me. Not as versatile a defender as I would like. But one of the biggest things I'll miss if the NBA doesn't come back this year is seeing a Raptors-Celtics series to see him and Siakam go at it. That was going to be one of my favorite matchups because they were the Raptors were two and the Celtics were three. So I would have loved to have seen that 2-3 matchup. So,
yeah, you want to talk about underrated, by the way.
Oh, yeah, of course. Siakam.
Yeah.
But I think Tatum, maybe it's because he's on the Celtics, I think he's just a touch overrated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a lot of that is a situation where only time will tell.
So, yeah, absolutely.
I think that's it for now.
All right. First podcast.
How about that? Months.
Awesome.
Yeah. Thank you so much to everybody for watching, listening, however you may be taking this in. Thank you so much. We'll be back with more episodes soon, for absolutely. Sure.
All right. Stay safe, everybody.
Yeah. Take care.